Welcome to Kingston Reid's Word to the Wise podcast series for HR and safety professionals. My name is Krista Leonard and I'm joined by my fellow partner, John Macris, and we are rolling up our sleeves today to discuss mandating COVID vaccinations in the workplace. Hello, John.
Hello, Krista.
We are observing a noticeable shift in community sentiment against vaccine hesitancy as the number of vaccinated Australians rise and those states which have been in lockdown have the light at the end of the tunnel. Hooray. In New South Wales, we expect to have 70% of the population vaccinated by early October, which will see retail, gyms and hospitality cautiously reopen for the fully vaccinated. And I think Melbourne are just a couple of weeks after that. The new freedoms, which are being announced in New South Wales today as we go to air, are part of New South Wales' roadmap to recovery and are expected to only be able to be enjoyed, at least initially, by those that are fully vaccinated. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian has said on a number of occasions that those living in the state have been warned. If they are not vaccinated, they won't be able to participate in the many freedoms that people will have when we reach that 70% vaccination rates. And we know Queensland and Western Australia are on a different trajectory and pathway out, but what is obvious, John, is that there is an immense incentive out there for individuals to become fully vaccinated. So is it necessary that workplaces step into the fray and make it a requirement for their employees or contractors to be vaccinated?
Well, Krista, I guess what's clear is that vaccines provide a way out of the ongoing lockdowns, and the medical evidence shows that protection from hospitalisation and death is one of the key issues around vaccination. The research overseas and locally shows that the protection is significant because of the transmissibility of Delta. As a workplace issue, it's a risk, like any other risk in the workplace, and needs to be treated that way, where there's a likelihood of the workers contracting it, bringing it into the workplace and transmitting it within the workplace, and also taking it home. So that's why businesses in Australia are really discussing this topic and the issue around whether it's lawful and reasonable. We've seen over the life cycle of the particular Delta variant that there's been a shift in the federal and state government's willingness or unwillingness to mandate vaccinations, and certainly they've imposed that in certain occupation types. You're right, given the circumstances brought on by Delta in particular, there is a pressing need for organisations to have some clarity about their choices and how they want to support, you know, return to work efforts. And I guess vaccinations is one of those ways of doing that. And, you know, what we haven't seen is a lot of focus on the economic side of things. You know, we've seen a lot of talk around, you know, rights and vaccination, but, you know, what's the economic cost of not doing something about that?
Right. And, of course, employers will naturally prefer encouragement and persuasion and assistance rather than coercion as a basis for employees to access their vaccinations. But the good news is, thanks to the increase in supply and the increase in choice of vaccination, employers will naturally prefer encouragement, persuasion and assistance rather than coercion as a basis for employees to access vaccination. And the good news is, I think, thanks to the increase in supply and the increase in choice of vaccination, most of your company's workforce will choose on their own volition to be vaccinated. But what if that is insufficient? I mean, what do employers do to protect their workforce against infection by COVID-19? What are the objections to mandatory vaccination policies in the workplace that we're seeing out there? And more importantly, how can we address these issues from a legal and ethical perspective to make sure that everyone in your workforce has rolled up their sleeve before they return on site or to the office?
And Krista, I think these are some of the questions we're proposing to tackle today.
Right, so bring it on. Look, briefly, the threshold question is, and I think there's two, can and should the employer mandate COVID vaccinations? Now, dealing very quickly with the first, because this has been traversed, I think, a lot in coverage so far, but in terms of whether or not they can, the question really comes down to, is it lawful and reasonable? Now, look, on the lawfulness side of it, for a direction to be lawful, it can't be inconsistent with any law or the contract of employment or an industrial instrument that governs your workplace. So a direction need not be required by law to be lawful. I think that's clear. And in this case, a direction to be vaccinated is not inconsistent with work health safety laws, and it's not unlawful for an employer to require an employee to comply with its workplace policies. So the lawfulness of that two-pronged question, I think, is very easily dealt with. it's the reasonableness where we start to see some greyness. And whether it's proportionate to the workplace and within the context of work health safety policies and indeed obligations, I think that's where a lot of the analysis sits.
Well, the landscape's really changed. You know, Delta is a very different variant to the earlier variant we had last year. Highly transmissible. The health effects are well documented. We've certainly watched during the second wave here in New South Wales that the government, particularly the New South Wales government, has introduced requirements in certain industries like construction, health, aged care and similar industries, and in relation to people living in certain LGAs of concern so that they can work outside of their LGAs. These have been deemed high risk by the government, and certainly because of the nature of the people involved in their interactions being vulnerable people. They're deemed high risk, but I think also in the background we've got this economic question as well. You know, the impact of not being able to do construction, or the impact of not being able to look after aged or healthcare, or our hospitals not running properly. So I think there's this economic underlay in all of this, all of these discussions. Certainly the overwhelming majority of our clients operating in industries outside of those that I've just mentioned really want to know what they can do. They're asking the hard questions, you know, can we or should we introduce mandatory vaccination programs? And overwhelmingly, these workplaces probably have a genuine WHS basis to do so, given it is a risk and employers have to address those risks.
Well, let's talk about work health safety risk assessments then, because I think this is what a big part of the debate about reasonableness boils down to. Talk me through some of the threshold considerations regarding a COVID risk assessment.
Risk assessments, they're from a safety perspective, they're an everyday part of what we do. It's saying, what are the things that could impact on people and what measures can we take to eliminate or reduce those risks? We're not going to reduce, or we're not going to eliminate COVID risks. All we can do is minimise those risks, as we're using the terminology. So COVID is a risk, right? And the purpose of the risk assessment is to say, what controls or measures do we need to have in place to reduce that risk on people in the workplace? And so vaccine is one of those controls. Yeah, there are others that we've seen that we all adopted last year in the measures we had in the workplace, like COVID plans and check-ins and cleaning and hygiene, you know, proper ventilation, masks. You know, they're all part of the risk assessment mix. Vaccine is one of those controls that we need to implement.
And so I guess key to that in that is an industrial implication is how you go about communicating any decision to mandate the vaccination, and what you do if, you know, employees or contractors or indeed visitors to your workplace indicate that they don't want to or cannot be safely vaccinated.
Again, staying on that risk assessment theme, it's really about talking, or consultation means talking, you know, talking with your workforce, finding out what their concerns are, talking to your customer base, talking to other people you might interact with. What are their concerns in terms of COVID, non-COVID issues, mandating or not mandating? So that consultation piece is really important. And, you know, at a minimum, you know, most employers should be encouraging vaccination just like the government does. We really need to be communicating about that process.
And this process can be used to ascertain who in the workplace is vaccinated and who isn't. I think it's important to have that knowledge so you can, as an employer, make an informed decision about how work is going to be performed if and when either people are coming back to work or indeed they already work in the workplace at the moment, and from whether to direct workers back to the workplace or resume work in communal areas and the like. I think it's a reasonable adjustment, or to understand reasonable adjustments at least, you need to be knowledgeable about who is and who isn't vaccinated.
Yeah, and so consultation is going to help you gauge that level of concern for your workforce. And remember, there will be differences in people, there'll be cultural diversity, there'll be different understandings. And so, you know, understanding who might be vulnerable and why they may be vulnerable is part of all that consultation process.
So I'm finding, John, that there's generally two categories of employers out there. The first are those that want a mandate. They're lining up and they've been going through that process, and we've been assisting them with the implementation of that process. And that's either because they have to, they have a public health order that impacts on them, or because they've made a decision based on that work health safety risk assessment and overall consideration that it's the right thing to do. And the second category of employer out there is those that don't want to mandate, but also don't necessarily want anyone not vaccinated returning to the office. And I think it's that second category of workplace which I think is increasingly becoming trickier to manage, because it's premised on an understanding that if a worker is not vaccinated, they can work from home indefinitely, which doesn't necessarily make sense, because as the employer, you essentially lose control to direct the worker to return to work if they remain unvaccinated. And if The requirement is that you need to be vaccinated to work in the office. You flip it around. If the contract of employment defines your place of work as being located at the employer's premises or office, then it kind of becomes a lawful and reasonable direction then anyway, doesn't it? So with those two types of workplaces in mind, let's turn to the first one. Workforces that have mandated the vaccine. Which workplaces are you seeing, John, fall into that category?
Well, the first category is really those ones that were mandated, say, the New South Wales Public Health Order, which were the aged care, education, early learning, and I think disability workers have just been mandated to commence just recently. It's essentially those workplaces coming into contact with people quite frequently and also vulnerable people. And so, you know, ones that haven't been mandated but fall within that are probably your retail, hospitality, tourism, transport, because of that interaction and hence the need for vaccination.
So undertaking a risk assessment to determine the hazards and your control measures and then consulting with your workforce is likely to then give you that solid basis to make that decision that yes, given the nature of that workforce, you want to introduce a mandate. And the question then is, well, should you? And I guess that question is going to come down to not only the work health safety risk assessment that you've performed, but also the process in which you're going to start to mandate those that requirement. And generally that's, you know, can be through a policy, it can be just a direction, but certainly a policy is going to enable you to set out the process, the timeline. It can give you the basis and lay out the reasoning why the employer is wishing to do this, and also set out some exemptions. And really the key exemption in this space will be if an employee or a worker has a genuine medical contraindication that requires that they cannot be vaccinated, in which case you need to have a process to deal with that. And certainly the policy should also contemplate the process for somebody who objects without a valid reason to do so to that mandate, and of course the process you're going to follow if that does occur.
And of course one of the other reasons that was being given was supply, but it appears that there's plenty of supply at the moment, so I think the supply issue won't be as significant as the medical contraindications.
Right. So navigating the process of how to manage vaccine hesitant staff, I guess, and deal with those general concerns, including medical contraindications, will be important and will go a long way to ensuring a decision is upheld as being reasonable if the decision is ultimately not followed and there's a challenge. I read an opinion piece this morning, John, in the Sydney Morning Herald, which traverses the philosophical issues associated with employers or governments mandating vaccines. And that article pointed out that there's a huge difference between vaccinating the willing and coercing the unwilling into vaccinations by threatening their livelihoods, which is essentially what ultimately, you know, a policy would do. What does an employer do in reading this and weighing up whether or not to make that decision to mandate or not?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. That particular article referred to some World Health Organization advice, and that advice looked at, you know, the decision-making process to mandate or not mandate. And it said that encouragement was better than vaccination, which is the approach that the federal and state governments have taken in Australia. What's interesting in that piece is about the role of public authorities or government in terms of mandating, but what it doesn't look at is the employer's perspective in terms of the employer's obligations, say from a safety point of view or from an employment law point of view, to make sure, you know, that the workplace is safe and what steps it can practically take to make those safe. So whilst it's an interesting piece and raises some really interesting issues, I'm not sure it actually covers the issues that our employer clients have to face. Mm.
All right, so let's turn to that second category of employer that we mentioned before, and that's those who have made a decision not to mandate the vaccination but have concerns about allowing unvaccinated staff return to the office or workplace. We also have the ongoing work health safety considerations, of course, in relation to permitting employees to work from home and on an ongoing or permanent basis. So let's talk through some of these issues.
Well, again, risk issues, you know, it's been interesting. In May this year, the New South Wales government introduced a code of practice for psychosocial risks, and that's really brought psychological and psychosocial risks to the fore. And they've been around a long time, but also the COVID debate has also brought, you know, physical and psychological health risks to the fore. And so the common issues that are arising in terms of the COVID context is, you know, do we have them working from home? What do we need to provide from working from home? So workstation set up. The hours that people are working, you know, we're just not logging off at home now when we're working at home and we're readily available. The physical environment, but also the psychosocial risks that the code of practice raises, and the support that we need to give people is I think one of the big ones. You know, what support should we be giving people to make sure that their health and well-being is as it should be in this really difficult time?
Yeah, and I think we can't underestimate that hidden pandemic brought on by the toll of COVID-19, the stress and anxiety that's out there, be it, you know, because somebody is working from home or in isolation, because of the blurring of hours and the increase in fatigue and the rise in, you know, domestic and family violence incidents across the country, which has been a reportable trend, unfortunately, again, brought on by the stresses of COVID-19 and the particular situations to stay at home. What steps can and should employers be taking when considering these issues and allowing employees to remain working at home?
Yeah, and I think it comes back to the consultation piece we spoke about before. So that really keeping in contact with your workforce, that greater management oversight, looking at things like the hours they're working, their productivity, making sure people are having breaks, you know, are there gaps in work shifts? So a lot of employers have said, you know, we're not going to have any Zoom or team meetings between, say, 12 and 1, for example. Some clients are saying we're not having any meetings on Friday afternoons. You know, additional check-ins with your staff is pretty important. Talking to them about what's going on at home. There may be issues at home. That means that they probably should come into the office rather than work at home, for example. And those psychosocial considerations we mentioned before, you know, those isolated working environments, you know, some workers do that in the general course of things. You know, most of us are used to interacting with people, and so not having those interactions has been significant. And, you know, the reality is that there is a period of heightened anxiety at the moment and lots of uncertainty, and these psychosocial risks are very real.
Right, and some of the objections or concerns that I've seen employees raise with clients of mine when discussing whether or not they want to be vaccinated and indeed return to the office is that some have raised that there's concerns that there's no long-term safety assessments of the vaccines, that we don't have that yet, or that it wasn't a requirement of their condition of, you know, a condition of their employment, or, you know, that the issue of whether an employee receives a medical procedure is on them and should sit entirely with them and not something that the employer can impose, down to, you know, I don't want to return if Sally, who sits in the same workspace as me, is unvaccinated. And at the end of the day, these objections, I think, whilst generally held, don't override the employer's safety obligations to that worker or to indeed to the other workforce. And I guess it just reinforces what you said before about really consulting and talking with your workforce to understand what the issues are, and then what you've done as an employer to mitigate or minimise those issues.
And all of those considerations you've just raised need to be fed into the risk assessment. So it's about saying, yeah, we've heard you, we've listened to these considerations. We need to factor, you know, which ones are actually genuinely safety concerns. You know, one that you didn't mention there was people travelling to work on public transport, for example. And people will be concerned about getting on a train or a bus if the person next to them may or may not be vaccinated. So all of those things need to feed into the risk assessment process and which consultation is part of.
Yeah, and then feed in, I guess, to the employment side of the equation and what contractually and lawfully the employer can do with that. All right, so we're going to finish on a, I think, a big topic here, and one, again, that is front of mind with many employers when you talk about COVID, and that's workers' compensation. So when will COVID-19 be an illness capable of being compensable under a workers' comp scheme?
Yeah, so with any workers' comp case, the injury has to be contracted in the course of employment, and the employment has to be a substantial contributing factor. In some jurisdictions like Victoria, for example, the regulator down there has said, you know, we're going to presume it happened. If someone gets it in a certain a healthcare context or an aged care context, we're going to presume it, you got it as part of your work, and therefore it'll be work-related. The other jurisdictions haven't really gone into that presumption yet. But we've had the one case in New South Wales where a gentleman died on a trip to New York late last year, and it was established that he contracted COVID as a result of his work being that journey. And there was some, of course, the insurers would have wanted to take this one on because they wouldn't want to set a precedent. But, you know, the decision was that he contracted COVID on the trip to New York, which was a work-related trip, and therefore he was working at the time. And it was in the course of his employment, which was part of his trip, and was found to be compensable. And, you know, the current debate, I don't know if the case is resolved, but there's an $11 million payout in relation to expenses and other things that are being claimed as part of that case.
And that one's an interesting one, because the finding that the New South Wales Personal Injury Commission made was based on a number of factors, as you said, including the onset of symptoms. So when he started to display symptoms, his documented reluctance to wear a mask, the likely exposure to many people during the period of travel, and the medical evidence of the likely incubation period. And they found in his case that the virus caused pathological changes, including strokes, heart attacks, and profound respiratory failure, which fell within the meaning of personal injury under Section 4 of the New South Wales Workers' Compensation Act. So it's a really interesting case, because it does look at some of the contributing factors which were squarely on him, but also those that fell and were found to be on the employer as a result of the way in which he worked and his requirement to travel.
And a large part of that will come down to the medical evidence, of course, but it is a worker-friendly scheme, and there is a presumption in favour of workers having sustained an injury in the course of employment. It's a case that will be closely watched, and I'm sure there'll be other cases, and there'll be certainly appeals and all sorts of wonderful things. But certainly, if it meets the criteria of in the course of employment, employment being a contributing factor, the insurers and the New South Wales Eye Care has said that, you know, they will be accepted claims if that link can be made.
And so it's not a determining or the determining factor, but it's certainly a factor to consider when undertaking a risk assessment and deciding what your policy is in relation to whether or not you mandate vaccines in the workplace. Absolutely. So what are the takeouts from today, from our discussion? What are some of your top tips?
Well, I think, from a work health and safety perspective, you can't go past the risk assessment process. It is a fundamental part of work health and safety. And I think, you know, so doing a really solid, thorough risk assessment of what the interactions are in the workforce, between workers and in the workforce and other people coming into the workplace, I think that's really important. Second one is really consulting with your workforce. You know, the psychosocial risks are significant. And again, if someone is having difficulty and it can be work-related, it will probably manifest itself in a workers' comp claim anyway. So again, risk assess, consultation are my top two.
Yeah, and I think I'd just add to that if you do establish a process or a requirement that workers need to be vaccinated, make sure you've got a process underpinning that which is transparent, but which deals with what you do in the event that a worker says, no, I can't, or I don't want to, and that traverses obviously your obligations in respect of discrimination law, which really practically really only extend to medical contraindications, to the extent there are any, and that you follow a process that's procedurally fair in the event that tough decisions need to be made. John, thank you. I should just mention, if you didn't attend our work health safety webinar recently, which dealt with all things COVID-19 and mandating COVID vaccinations and much more, you can obtain a copy of that webinar from our website. Go to www.kingstonreed.com, and you can download A Word to the Wise so that you can stream our podcasts as they hit by downloading the podcast on whichever app you get your podcasts from. Thank you.
Thanks, Krista.